It's Travolution from Los Angeles with more from the Focusrite conference. So more from the Purple Pod here in Los Angeles, California for our last special episode from the annual Focusrite conference. Once again, sponsored by Travelzoo. In this particular episode, we talk to Rod Cuthbert from Viator. We also speak to Sam Shank, ex of Sidestep, now of Dealbase. We also catch up with a chap that puts together an aviation podcast, Addison Shonland, and we also talk to Mike Stitt from Travelzoo. So welcome back to another edition of the Purple Pod. As we said earlier, we're still here in Los Angeles for the annual Focusrite conference. We got into the conference proper, you might say, today, the 2 days of what they call the center stage element of the 4 day extravaganza, which is just really full of keynote speakers, talkback sessions, as they call them, where other people within the industry kind of interrogate one of the keynote CEOs. It's been an absolutely fascinating couple of days, really. It's been incredibly hot, actually, coming from London on Sunday morning, which was decidedly chilly. It's been in the early 30s here, which I'm told, after talking to one of the concierges down in reception earlier today, this is actually unusually warm for November here in California. But we move on. We've got 4 interviews lined up for the rest of this podcast, about half an hour long. Had some good feedback from the one we did the other day from the Innovation Summit. But we were not talking to any of the innovators today. We're talking to some of the stalwarts of the industry. So it's, but like I said, it's been a fascinating couple of days, and we'll try and grab a few more interviews that we'll put on a podcast next week. But first of all, one of the people that we ran into, who we generally see at any kind of Focusrite event, Rod Cuthbert, is the founder of Viator, the destination services kind of agency. They've got some interesting things developing. They've just, like you'll hear in the interview, they've just recently hired someone to run the Europe office, Patrick Office from Hotels.com. But I caught up with Rod earlier this morning, who was sheltering in a marquee. He didn't seem to be enjoying the sun too much, I must admit. I'm kind of with him on that one. It's very, very warm here. But we began by talking a little bit about where Viator is at the moment. One of the things we were saying before we started recording is that it's actually been quite refreshing for me coming out here, and there hasn't been this talk of doom and gloom in the economy. You get the sense, and I think it was set particularly by the Innovation Summit on Monday, that most people are just accepting the fact that it's going to be quite tough over the next year or so, but they're already looking to 2010. I mean, is this either something that you're doing, or are you feeling the same kind of tone from people here?
Absolutely, and I think the folks at Focusrite take a long view. They know it won't be long before we're looking back and saying, well, that wasn't much fun, but now we're on the up cycle again, and how high will it go? So it's smart. It makes good sense to focus on innovation right now, to focus on what you can do on your site or in your business that's going to put you in a good position for when the market does turn.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we've spoken about before is that you seem to be in quite a unique position, because you don't have a commodity product. You're providing things for people whether they're going away or not. So, I mean, and I suspect that you would say that you can hopefully weather this storm because you're still selling products for destinations.
We think we're probably weathering it in our category better than others, because the people who are deciding to still travel are more conscious of getting full value for their investment. So they're saying, all right, we're going to Barcelona for 5 days or Europe for 2 weeks, whatever it is. We better do more than just shop and walk aimlessly around this city with the Lonely Planet guide. We better have some real fun and learn some things and be educated and understand the culture, etc. And that plays directly into our hands, into this whole category where they can, as Philip would say, search, shop and buy. The perfect storm. It's just perfect for Viator.
And you've recently hired a boss for Europe, Patrick Ogvist, ex of Hotels.com. We know Patrick very well, but it seems that because you've hired someone particularly to look after the European market, you see that as just a strong place for you to be.
Europe's always been the most important destination area for us, but recently up to 50% of our customers, actually our travellers, have been Europeans, whether they're from the UK or they're English-speaking customers from Germany or Scandinavia or wherever. So they're buying on the .com site. We want to make it easier for them to buy in their native language, in their native currency, etc.
Yeah, so there's plans to increase the kind of language sites that you provide them?
Yeah, we're going to do German, Spanish and French early in 2009, and then three or four other language sites later on in the year. We'll have all the necessary currencies. We have euros and GBP right now, but if we need more currencies, they'll be available. And we think that, you know, with 5 or 6 weeks annual leave and lots of low-cost carriers that can get you where you want to go for, you know, less than the price of than a haircut, it's a perfect market for us.
Well, I know exactly what you're talking about when we're saying about haircuts, obviously. But, but I mean, it's interesting, the Viator model. I mean, I was talking to somebody earlier, talking about vacation rentals, and that seems to be another one of these kind of, maybe it's not so much untapped now, but it's one of the potential growth areas for online travel. I mean, you would obviously say the same for your kind of destination services. It seems that these two are the two that are going to be the things that grow over the next year, rather than just commoditized hotel and flight selling.
Well, I think the interesting thing is that the travel industry didn't used to think of destination activities or vacation rentals as being part of the travel industry, but the market certainly did. Consumers absolutely thought of the activities when they got there as the core part of their travel experience. So the industry is really just redefining itself and saying, oh, we need these guys under our umbrella as well.
Yeah, so redefining or waking up, depending on what term you want to use.
Yeah, perhaps I was a little a little less critical than you were.
I mean, what does it mean for Viator then if a huge organisation like one of the big OTAs came in and started doing the same kind of thing that you were doing? Would you find yourself particularly under pressure, or do you think that because you're only doing that you're slightly better placed to deal with it?
Well, Expedia already are a big player in this marketplace. Expedia sell an awful lot of destination services and activities, the same types of products as we do. But the trend that we're seeing, and it's a really clear trend, and they'll tell you the same thing, is that people want to book from a specialist. They don't necessarily want to book this type of product at the same time as they book their flight or hotel, which really is a chore. You're doing it a few weeks out, you're making sure you get the right price, you want to lock it in, you hit the buy button, you don't want to think about whether or not you go to the Moulin Rouge or the Crazy Horse. You'll think about that later. You've got time to do that separately, and you'll do a separate search on Google or Yahoo and find a site that can sell you those products separately. So I think consumers want to work with a specialist. We're not really concerned about the OTAs. They've got a really complex, competitive marketplace to play in. They don't need to worry too much about this.
Yeah, and especially at the moment.
Oh, exactly. Who would want to be in that business? I'm glad we do what we do and not sell flights and hotels.
Okay, well, we wish you all the best for the next 12 months. Maybe we'll see you in Orlando next year or at ITB in Berlin, but all the best.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Now, many of you will remember when Kayak bought Sidestep late last year. There was quite an exit of people from the Sidestep part of that deal. One in particular was a chap called Sam Shank, who came through to Sidestep through the Travel Post acquisition a few years ago. Anyway, he has now emerged, or re-emerged, shall we say, with his own startup, a venture called DealBase.com. They were one of those that were on the Innovation Summit the other day, but he was, he's been kicking around for a few days, and I promised that I would catch up with him at some point. We managed to do that today, and this is what he had to say. Okay, so we're here on what for some of us is day three of the Focusrite conference here in Los Angeles, and I've literally stumbled across Sam Shank, who many of you will remember from his time at Sidestep and before that Travel Post, and he was one of the 32 innovators on Monday afternoon for his new venture, which is DealBase.com. It's pretty young, isn't it, Sam? I mean, it's a couple of weeks old. You were in beta from May. I mean, how does it feel coming to something like this and showcasing DealBase to what's essentially your peers with it being so young?
Oh, it's very rewarding. The response to DealBase has been very strong. And there's nothing personally more rewarding than having an idea that was 6 months ago just an idea, building a company, building a great team, getting a great product out the door, and then getting an incredible response from people in the industry.
Yeah, sure. I mean, one of the things you said to us before we started recording is that there's just the three of you. Which, I mean, given there's only a few of us at Travolution, we can kind of have an affinity with you. But, you know, you look at some of the size of the organisations here that are, you know, working in the same space, and they've got, you know, hundreds of employees. I mean, three people does seem like it's going to be a lot of work for you for initially.
That's right. But, you know, I'd rather have fewer people that are more efficient and that are working harder. And I think it's a competitive advantage for us to have a smaller team. We can adjust to market conditions more rapidly. We have a much lower expense side of the equation so that we can you know, really make this business work without a huge amount of capital.
Sure. I mean, one of the other things you said is that, you know, you've done things, dare we say it, reasonably cheaply, and some of the other innovators that were here on Monday had seed funding in the double figures of $1 million. I mean, that's another difference between you and some of the other people here.
Well, don't get me wrong. It would be very nice to have many millions of dollars to build DealBase with, but necessity is the mother of invention. But I also believe in doing things very efficiently until we start seeing traction. And when we start seeing traction and get positive feedback, then it's time to put the pedal to the metal and add some rocket fuel and go from there.
Excellent cliches there, pedal to the metal. We like that. I mean, one of the things that was quite noticeable when you did your presentation on Monday and you were showing people, a lot of people probably for the first time, what DealBase is all about, is that there was a kind of a, this is very similar, some of the functionality was very similar to some of the, you know, the whizzy gadgets that were on Sidestep. We're talking about the, you know, the slide bars and things like that. You've obviously taken quite a lot from what you were doing at Sidestep and incorporated it into, certainly the user interface is quite similar.
Oh, that's right. Even going back before Sidestep, my background is comparison shopping, but more in the product space. So the idea of putting together pricing and putting together purchase opportunities in a very structured order and then providing people with tools to find the right product and buying opportunity for them, it's really in my DNA. And it's really fun to apply it to a space that has been neglected with that type of approach, which is the travel deals area.
Sure. And one of the kind of perennial questions that people ask of a startup is, what's the kind of end game? What are you looking at 2 years from here? Are you hoping that another larger organization comes along and, you know, sees, okay, so that DealBase is probably worth checking out. Maybe we can acquire them. Is that the kind of strategy that you want to build it big enough so that you can sell it? Or do you think that it's got legs of its own to last in what is, you know, quite a crowded market, just online travel per se?
Well, we have the luxury of being very flexible with what we do with the business. But the reason I started it, it's a lot of work to start a business. And I really want to build a big, game-changing business. I'd really like to be the biggest site for travel deals in the world. And that's the goal that we're setting out to do, and we're on our way to accomplishing it.
Okay, so there's lofty ambitions. I mean, you're here just with three people in the U.S., like we said. I mean, how would you go about moving DealBase into the UK or the European market, given that you do need to have a relationship to a certain extent with hoteliers?
Well, I think it's a combination of having the technical team here in the United States that would build the tools and the approach for and the functionality for the European market and the UK market specifically, and then having a team of salespeople on the ground in the home country that are working on establishing those relationships. And all of that will come in time.
Okay, well, we wish you all the best. I mean, me and some of the other journalists and bloggers were quite impressed with what we saw on Monday. We hope the next 12 months goes very well, and we'll hope to see you in, I believe it's Orlando again next year for next year's Focusrite.
Absolutely, and the best is yet to come.
Sam Shank there, thanks to him. Now, there's quite a few characters, shall we say, that have been kicking about here the last few days. Not least is a chap called Addison Shonland, who not only is he a blogger, he produces an incredibly popular podcast here in the US called it's called the Aviation Podcast. He is very well known to our sister title, Flight, back in the UK. But he was here just for the first 2 days, just to listen to the Innovation Summit and also to take in some of the workshops. He actually attended both of the blogger panels that I was taking part in, although we repeated the content each time. He came along to both of them, interjected at various points. He was quite a forthright, opinionated chap, but very, very entertaining. And I was very keen to talk to him about his particular podcast, which is listened to by quite a few hundreds of people within the Boeing and Airbus empires, and keen to learn a little bit more about why he did it, his motivation for doing so, and kind of where it goes from here.
Tell us a little bit about what was your kind of motivation for starting this podcast, and who are you hoping that it's reaching and why?
Well, when I started the whole podcast thing, I have to go back probably 3 years. I started iagblog.com, and then that became very popular, and I decided to monetize that traffic and then created a subscriber blog, and I moved much of the content that was going on the free blog to the subscriber blog, and kept some free content on the public blog. But then everybody and his cousin was blogging, and there's a lot of blogging noise. And I decided I wanted to go one step different, and podcasting just seemed to be the great place to go. And it's become by far the biggest source of traffic and following of any of the media stuff that I've been doing.
Okay, how long has it taken you to get from where you had your great idea to where you are now? What kind of people are listening to it, and how many numbers are you getting?
Well, the podcast site is probably about 18 months old, and the most recent statistics that I was looking at, there are about 9,000 subscribers, and in September, October, we had somewhere around 25,000 downloads. So there is an enormous amount of traffic, and the site that the podcasts are hosted on shows me a map of where the traffic is coming from, and it's fantastic. There's one person, for example, in Sofia, that is downloading these podcasts by the dozen, which is lovely, but I have no idea why it would be so interesting to have that in Bulgaria.
Okay, so I mean, much of the talk here at the conference, and certainly the sessions that you've been in on as well, because I've seen you, because I've been in on the panels, but everyone's been talking about blogging and social networking and Twittering, and not many people are talking about podcasts as a distribution channel for content and engagement with customers. I mean, you do a podcast and we do a podcast at Travolution, but none of the travel companies are looking at broadcast as a medium. Why do you think that is?
No, that's a great question that we should have brought up in the session. I think that if you look at the people that were in the session, and for example, the blogger session was mostly people like you and me, and there are very few corporations that are ready for this. I think there's some kind of a fear of controlling the message and controlling the medium, and what one would think the PR people would be much more amenable. And remember, in the one session we were talking about the Southwest Airlines blog, how successful that has been, because it's been embraced by people internally and as a consequence externally. American Airlines had a blog, they took it away. It's a very interesting thing, and I think podcasting is just beyond the bleeding edge for many of these people.
But a podcast is different from a blog or engaging in a social network, because you do control the message, because it's a broadcast medium more than anything. So is it because it's seen as something quite modern and new, when in fact it isn't? It's, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's a radio show, and you can control the message because it's a broadcast medium. Is it because it's got a kind of new terminology around it that seems to frighten people off, or is it because they just can't be bothered? It's another thing that they have to think about.
I don't know. I think there's probably a lot to it when you talk about the newness, the fad, so to speak. But of course, as you point out, it is not a new thing at all. It's been around for a long time, and it's interesting, one would have thought that medium would be embraced much more quickly than blogging.
Yeah.
Precisely because with a recording, as we're doing now, if I you can go back and edit all that out and make me sound quite intelligent. Well, you might stop giggling.
Well, we might just leave it in, of course.
Right. But the thing, okay, jokes aside, but you can, of course, you can make the message sound much better. With a blog, it's the written word, it is what it is.
Yeah.
It's a good question. I wish I could give you a good answer. I don't know why that would be.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that there's a good opportunity for the likes of Boeing and Airbus, who are some of your listeners, should we call them, you know, that they could create good content in the form of a podcast that aircraft enthusiasts would perhaps find quite interesting, because there's a lot of aircraft enthusiasts out there.
You know, it's funny you should mention that. I've done a podcast with the CEO of Airbus North America about the A380 and other things. That was fantastic. We got over 1,000 downloads on that podcast. Then I spoke to another gentleman at Airbus, Alan Pardo, who is head of the A350 program, and he did an update with me on how the Airbus A350 was doing. That one got over 1,200 downloads. Fantastic response, exactly as you say. I did a podcast with the CEO of Hawaiian Airlines after they put in an order for a whole bunch of Airbuses. Again, fabulous response from the kind of people you've described. Boeing, interestingly enough, have been extremely reluctant. They won't do any interviews. However, I'm talking about the commercial side. When we did that, you know, they had the U.S. Air Force tanker order. I did two podcasts with them about the tanker and one with Northrop Grumman about the tanker. There was that particular area of the company was very open to discussing their business, their ideas, their airplane, and their thinking. But the commercial side of the shop at Boeing seems to be very reluctant to talk about this. But it's, as you point out, there is this group of people, this audience out there clamoring for information. Airliners.net, of course, is where they all hang out and share some really great insight. And if you can give them grist for the mill, the traffic just shoots right up.
Okay, well, it's been fascinating talking to you, and we've been hanging out a fair bit the last couple of days. I mean, we've still got 2 days to go. I mean, moving away from the podcasting and the aviation industry, coming up over the next couple of days, what are some of the highlights, or what you hope will be highlights from some of the main stage speakers tomorrow?
I don't plan to be here tomorrow.
Oh, dear.
So my highlight will be sleeping in my own bed.
Right, well, I hope you make it. Obviously, anyone who wants to listen to your podcast, and I hope they will, it's from aviationpodcasts.com, or you can go to podomatic.com, where the Travolution podcast is also hosted, and find it there on IAG blog. So all the best. Thanks for talking to us, and maybe we'll speak again soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
So our thanks there to Addison Shonland. You can pick up his podcast, like we said, at aviationpodcasts.com. It's actually very entertaining. I had a listen to one of them earlier, but incredibly popular. Thousands and thousands of downloads. He's obviously hit on a winning formula there with his unique style. Last of all then, Mike Stitt, who works for Travelzoo here in the US, used to work with Chris Lachlan, who many of you will know. He's the boss of Travelzoo in the UK. He worked with Chris Lachlan many years ago here in the US. But I was very keen to catch up with him, not least because they were supporting this podcast, but not having met anybody from the US end of Travelzoo before. But we caught up over a coffee earlier on today. Okay, so we're here this afternoon with Mike Stitt. From Travelzoo and the sponsor of this podcast. It's been an interesting few days for me personally, coming from the UK, where everyone seems to be talking about what a terrible plight the economy is, and you come here and everyone's reasonably upbeat. I mean, you're a deals publisher. This probably actually feeds into what you're trying to achieve anyway, because people are looking for deals because they're more worried about where their dollar or their pound is going.
Yeah, that's true. We're definitely seeing on... Just from a consumer perspective right now, it's probably a better time to travel than ever before. The deals we're seeing in the market, particularly in the hotel, the cruise, even the airline space right now, are the best we've ever seen. So, of course, as people have lingering doubts about the economy, it's more important than ever to get a good deal. And I think that's a huge part of what we're trying to do at Travelzoo in terms of really putting the travel company, who is also needing to sell seats, sell cabins, sell rooms, in touch with consumers who, as we know, actually I just heard this at Focus right here, that only 8% of the people that they're surveying are planning to cancel their travel plans, because the reality of it is most people, you know, get a limited amount of vacation every year, and it's not like people are going to cancel their vacations or their trips. So. You know, it's a great time to get deals.
Yeah, indeed. In the UK, we have the phrase distressed inventory. I hope it means the same to you as it means to me, which is travel companies suddenly finding that they've got a lot of hotel rooms or a lot of seats that they need to get rid of. And, you know, they've typically come to organisations like Travelzoo to help them shift that stock straight away. Have you seen an increase in the number of organisations that are coming to you and saying, okay, so we're a bit stuffed on this particular route. Can you help us get rid of some fares?
You know, it varies by industry vertical. So in the airline space or airfare space, what we're seeing is that, of course, the airlines have gotten better and better about controlling the their supply. They can go park planes in the desert, or they can just fly or reallocate the planes to different areas. So surprisingly, though, we're still seeing a fair amount of airfare deals, especially what's interesting here in the U.S. anyway, around the holiday travel period when fares are typically very, very high. We're still seeing a good amount of deals this year. Airlines are getting smarter and smarter about trying to channel people into dates like kind of shoulder dates or off-peak dates around the holidays, and getting people to fly then. Hotels specifically, we're seeing a lot of distressed inventory from hotels, and even the hotels vary a little bit by market. On the cruise side, what we're seeing is that there's more and more supply coming on board, with new ships sailing all the time. And then, of course, like, people tend to book cruises a little bit further out. And so maybe the cruise sector has just now started to catch up with some of this economic news. But in general, I think the deals that we're seeing are a product of a little bit more distressed inventory. Or perhaps consumers are just waiting a little bit longer to travel. So there's a little bit more uncertainty on the side of the travel companies.
Yeah. One thing that's always kind of fascinated me about Travelzoo as a business and its business model is that how do you grow? I mean, is it by having more people subscribe to the newsletter, or is it having more deals or better quality deals or higher yield value deals? I mean, what happens for Travelzoo now, apart from geographically growing as well?
Am I allowed to say all the above? Of course, it's always important for us to acquire more subscribers, and not just subscribers, but high-quality subscribers. So on the marketing end, we're very diligent about, you know, signing up very high-quality double opt-in or opt-in subscribers to our various publications now around the world. So that's part of it. Specifically in my area, we're really, really focused on the quality of the content. Quality of the content being defined as not only deals that are just really, really good. They have a lot of value behind them. They're deals that make people take trips that they hadn't otherwise planned, which is incredibly powerful if you're on the travel company side, where you can stimulate incremental demand like that. So we're really focused on the quality of the deals, and then also the user experience. We operate in the U.S. and then also in Europe. We operate a test booking center that makes sure that the deals that we're publishing are not only great, but they're also very easy to book. So it's a lot of those things. And then, you know, probably the last area is just our overall global strategy. We believe that it's great for people, the end user, to get their travel deal information from local markets and local areas. So I happen to work in the U.S. business, but of course a lot of people from the U.S. are going to go travel to London, which is a great thing because we have an office in London and we have local travel deal experts in London that know a lot more about what truly is a deal in London versus the way I might research a deal sitting in, you know, Chicago, for example.
Sure. And the final point, one of your competitors here in the U.S. Tried and failed to launch in the U.K. a few years back. We don't need to name them here, but you know exactly who I mean. But is this something inherently difficult in launching a Travelzoo model in a new territory, or do you have a tried and tested method for doing it? Because they didn't manage to nail it, but Travelzoo have. And in the UK, the whole kind of deal publishing newsletter thing has really taken off. But for some, it hasn't worked. Is there some kind of magic formula?
Well, if there is a magic formula, I'm not inclined to give it out here today. But you know, we're launching all over the world now. I think we're up to 11 different markets where we have businesses and we have publications and websites. And, you know, for us is really, there are probably a lot of different formulaic things that I could go into. But really, again, like, we just focus on the end user. We want to make sure that people are getting really good deals that are easy to book. Yeah. And that that's good for the consumer, and it's also good for the travel company that we're working with to fill those rooms or to take care of that distressed inventory.
Okay, great stuff. Well, you've got to stand here for Focus right there for another 2 days. I wish you well with that. And no doubt we'll be speaking to Chris Loughlin back in the UK when we return as well. But nice talking to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Kevin. Yep.
So our thanks there to Mike Stitt, and also earlier on in this podcast to Addison Shonland, Sam Shank, and Rod Cuthbert of Viator. We've had a fascinating few days here, and we head back to London tomorrow afternoon. That's on Thursday, back in sunny Sutton, as we say, probably on Friday. Now, we may get a few more interviews tomorrow. There's various people that I'm meeting tomorrow. We'll see what we can do, and we'll put them in another podcast next week. But thanks ever so much for listening. Thanks again to Travelzoo for sponsoring the podcast. And listen out for one of our podcasts next week or the following week. As always, you can pick these up off of iTunes or from podomatic.com, or also from the Travolution website, travolution.co.uk. But thanks ever so much for listening, and we'll speak to you soon.